It's Thursday, June 30th, 2016, and welcome to episode 190 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
I'm Brian Fulton.
Welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers, the show about teaching and learning with technology. And we've got a new guest with us today on today's show. Cindy Rich is out of the office this time, so we've invited Brian Poulter, who's been previously on the Tech Talk for Teachers show. Brian's with our journalism department here at Eastern Illinois University. And I've invited Brian in today to specifically talk about
something I don't have a degree in, the weather.
The weather.
How we can integrate weather and these inexpensive weather stations that are now available into curriculum, which is pretty exciting, I think.
So kind of a little bit of Internet of Things slant today for today's show. And then also we'll be doing our tech picks. I've kind of got an affordable pick that I've actually purchased and one that's on my wish list. And Brian, you've got
a nice little Android tablet, which is an absolute steal for the price.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and continue on. So sit back, relax, and here we go. In our next segment, we're going to be talking with Brian Poulter. So welcome back again, Brian.
It's nice to be back.
We're going to talk a little bit about weather stations today. We ran into each other in the hallway today, and I said, hey, it's about time for a podcast. And it's like, what are you up to? What's new?
Well, I've been playing with weather stations. It's actually something I've played with for quite a while. If I had a better math teacher probably in high school, I would have gone into meteorology because I love the science. I just wasn't as good at the math, and there's a lot of math and meteorology. So what these weather stations are little units about the size of a shoebox that you mount outside, really easy to mount at a high school. They've come way down in price. They are a whole lot better, and you can collect all kinds of data. I'll talk about that in a second. And then that allows you as a teacher, I would imagine, to do a lot of things with it. You could talk about statistics. You can do, obviously, science. You can even study the geographical effects that are the geology and how the lay of the land has effect on weather. There's just so much you can do with it. And again, the price of entry has come way down. The weather station I'm going to talk about is only $150.
Yeah.
And it's solar powered, although you have to replace a battery every couple of years. It sends the data wirelessly to a little unit that is uploaded to the internet and a site called Weather Underground, which was started several years ago at the University of Michigan. It's what the Associated Press now uses as, you know, when you get weather in your on TV sometimes or in your newspapers. That's where that weather information is coming. And one of the things that's cool about Weather Underground is they use these personal weather stations, as they're called, thousands of them all over the United States, to help provide data in addition to what the National Weather Service gathers. Mm-hmm. And you can get hyper-local forecasts. In this area, when I watch TV, my forecast is usually for a town that's 45 to 90 miles away.
Right.
When you log online using this data and their weather models and you say, what's the weather going to be like tomorrow? They're producing a weather forecast based on this data, other data that's for your specific locale. So I just read somewhere that the average person talks about the weather four times a day.
And in this part of Illinois, as a farmer, probably 400 times.
Or in my case, as a bicyclist who wants to know exactly where the wind is coming from and how much and how I can avoid it or decide to kill myself by riding into it. But you know, it's a great entry point, I would think, as a teacher to talk about a whole bunch of things.
This kind of falls in the general category. You know, another buzzword out there right now is Internet of Things with this miniaturization and, you know, just the price, you know, just falling on everything. So these sensors, as you said, are just, you know, affordable for the average person. And it kind of goes out there for those microclimates, as you said, because we're the same way. I had a conversation the other day. You know, we had rain last weekend. And I received 3/4 of an inch. I called my neighbor and said, you know, how much did you get? And he said 2 inches, and it's like 4 miles away.
Well, and what's really fun about these units are, besides prices, how accurately they're becoming. And to mirror your experience, this weekend I wasn't at home. I have a weather station in my backyard. But I was 2 hours away, and they got 2 inches of rain, and I got 0.79 inches. I could tell exactly. And what stuns me is that I have checked the accuracy of this, one of the cheaper weather stations you can get, with a physical measurement on several times, and it is spot on. It's amazing how accurate these things have become.
Yeah. So the sensors, it does, obviously, temperature?
Temperature, wind direction, wind speed, barometer, humidity, solar radiation. That's important for farmers. And UV radiation, which are two different things. Mm-hmm. And then there's a sensor that you mount inside of a building, and that's where your barometric pressure is actually measured. And it will, an additional, if you want to know, you can give you the temperature in that room and the humidity in that room, although mm-hmm. I ignore.
Yeah. So let's talk, you know, how does this relate to Tech Talk for Teachers, you know, and just teachers in general and the educational applications and things for, obviously, as a huge data collection point. You know, you have all that data available. It collects things historically, I take it.
Mm-hmm. The data, you can set up any way you want. Mine updates its data, I'm not kidding, every 5 seconds. Mm. So it's producing lots of data points. So you can change that. It's uploaded for free to the Weather Underground site, which is accessible to you and everybody else. And I can go back. If I had it on 3 years ago, I can go back to a specific date, and I can say what were the weather conditions on that date, with all those data points. And I believe that is also downloadable, if I'm not mistaken. There's some ways you can download it in a spreadsheet, although I might be mistaken on that.
Yeah. Right before we got together here to record this, I did download the app on my Android phone, and it's quite nice. You know, the geolocation services, you mentioned the GPS. So, I mean, you have everything in surprising number here, even in rural Illinois. They use little orange dots here to show each one of these weather underground stations, and there's a lot of orange dots on this map.
So yeah, so anyone can log in. You give your friends, your colleagues, the people in your locale the URL, the web address. They call up this special site that grabs all this data. It also provides weather radar. You can zoom in and out through a Google map with all this information on it, and you can specify to this Google map, do I want to see data from other data points? Do I just want to see the humidity map? Do I want to see a satellite map?
Right.
It's always telling you where you are. You can expand in, expand out.
Mm-hmm.
And what sort of neat, I think, is if my elementary school in Wisconsin was Peterson Elementary. It's always really good for a school to have a relationship with its community, their mm-hmm. community schools. And so when you set up this weather station, you go to Weather Underground and you say, give me an ID so it knows where your weather station is, and name it. So mm-hmm. you could name yours Peterson mm-hmm. Peterson Elementary Weather Station. I mean, mm-hmm. and once people realize that exists, they're like, here's the most accurate place around for me to get a weather forecast and data. You are becoming an integral part of that community, since, again, we all talk about weather all the time, and you're increasing that relationship. And the kids say, hey, that's something I work on. That's something I build. My weather site, I've given the address just to some of my neighbors, and one of the things it allows me to do is check how many times people have logged in to get data from my station, and it's hundreds and hundreds of times, almost 1,000 times a month. Other people have discovered it. My neighbors want to know, hey, did it rain last night? Do I need to water my garden?
Mm-hmm.
How much rain did we get?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a nice little resource. And again, I think it's very tieable into a number of different disciplines,
Kinds of, all kinds of things. You know, just doing a weather, you know, a TV show, like a little video segment or something, and having a round robin for, you know, every student to try, you know, doing a different one, or, you know, doing something through video conferencing with Skype and just, you know, making a relationship with another school in another state or another country for that matter, using the data, you know, barometric pressure, making predictions, becoming that weatherman, you know, doing your own forecast type things. And yeah, it all ties together.
One of our buzz concepts or buzzwords in higher education is reducing the silos between academic mm-hmm. areas. And if I want to stretch this a bit, but I think sometimes like a historian, because my father was a history teacher, and I think about what an entry point this is for talking about this discussion. One of the reasons why D-Day in World War II was mm-hmm. so successful was the weather was so bad, the mm-hmm. Germans suspected that there's no way the Allies would be stupid enough to attack in this weather. They didn't realize it would clear up sooner than it would, and so all their generals were off on holiday.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't know that the U.S. War of 1812 ended essentially because a hurricane came up the coast and scared the British away and said, we get the heck out of here before we burn. They were going to burn the entire city of Washington down, but they got scared away by a hurricane. I mean, weather does affect history, mm-hmm. and so what I'm saying is it creates entry points and data strings between different things that allows all the pieces of what I think you're trying to teach. When you teach something, it makes it all relevant to each other. Yeah. You want people to see the interconnection of these pieces.
And the observational methods and things. I'm a former science teacher, so I made my students go out and make logs, you know, like, you know, sunrise, sunset, moonrise, moonset. People don't realize the moon comes up and goes down just like the sun does. And I noticed in this app, they have sunrise, sunset, moonrise, moonset out there. And you, as a photographer, that's mm-hmm. probably of interest to you, you know, knowing what time you want to get to a certain, you know, location and things, and the shadows and the light involved.
So because it's grabbing some of your data you're creating, a whole bunch of data that the National Weather Service and other people are providing, and interlinking those, I think people start, your students would start to understand how intertwined all this stuff can be and should be for complete understanding.
Yeah, making those connections, making it fun, making it engaging for the students, and as you say, getting rid of those silos, because anything in its, you know, in its own sterile environment is not very exciting to learn. I was just recently doing a screencast series on, and I made an earth science notebook, and I started down the path of, well, what kind of sections do I need to have? Well, I need to have a section about volcanoes and oceans and plate tectonics and so forth. Then you get to thinking about scope and sequence in the curriculum. It's like, okay, I need to talk about volcanoes, but should I talk about plate tectonics first, because that requires subduction zones and making the magma, and, you know, it all ties together. So, and not any two students think alike, and we all have different prerequisite knowledge. So that's the fun and the joy and the personalization of tying, you know, that curriculum for that particular student and personalizing you know, the curriculum for that student.
And the entry points it provides. If I'm out in Colorado, I get to point to the mountains and talk about mm-hmm. induction and all those sorts of things and how plates flow over each other and all those things. If I'm in Illinois, we're not talking so much about volcanic activity because we don't have, at least visually, because we have nothing to point to.
No, but we can talk that we were oceanography because we were once a giant ocean here in Illinois, believe it or not.
And this weather station can provide one of those entry points mm-hmm. so they can physically see something. I think one of the things we forgot to mention is if you buy this from Ambient Weather are the people that produce this, and they produce a lot of weather products. If you buy it from them, it's $149. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cheap. If you buy it on Amazon, I think they jack the price by $10 to $159.
Yeah, we'll provide a link in the show notes for that.
And that's sort of all in now. You're going to want to mount it on a mast of some kind. Now, luckily, most schools are pretty tall. And for $90, you can get a mounting system that doesn't even require any bolts. It's basically just a pole that you put four cement blocks on just to make it heavier than the weather station. You're ready to go. I know this because I help advise our online daily newspaper, and we get our weather data somewhere else, and we want to start making our own weather data. Mm-hmm. We have a pretty good meteorology program through our various programs here at Eastern. And so the more we can – we're doing the same thing. The more we can draw people in, the mm-hmm. more they're going to get excited about this stuff. So, you know, for $200.
Yeah. And we should also mention on the data side of things, it is a Wi-Fi connected device. So you'd have to connect it to a Wi-Fi network.
Right. The device you mount uses three rechargeable alkaline batteries that cost $1 each to replace 2 years down the line. It sends a signal, they say, up to 100 feet. Mine's working easily at that distance, sends it to this little box that you hardwire into your router. Then that data is just sent off on the internet, and then it's accessible by anything that access the internet. You know, if you mm-hmm. have an Android or an iPhone or a desktop, whatever you use to, it's got an Android app, it's got a iPhone app, it's got a Roku app. And Amazon's coming up with their own tablets and that, and they've already got an app for it. So mm-hmm. they're thinking of using it as well. So it's a pretty neat little system. Once you get it set up, it's kind of bulletproof. It just works. Yeah. And if for whatever reason it stops working, Weather Underground, if that's where you're sending your data, you'll get this nice little email saying, hey, we're not getting any data from you, but if you don't give them any data for 3 months because you forgot to check it all summer, they don't shut you down. They just, you know, say, well, you're not producing any data.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, so something to think about over the course of summer. Summer, you know, science teachers, math teachers, video teachers, journalism teachers, just all, you know, geology, as you say, cross geology, geography, all kinds of cross-discipline uses for it. So over the summertime, you're interested in that. Or even if you don't, you know, buy the little weather station and things, you can certainly go out online. You know, it's all free, the data. Download the app, go to the website. And play around with
it. Yeah, you can go look at other people's weather, and you can call out a specific weather station. Mm-hmm. There's one here at WAUR, our TV, our student-run TV station, has one. I have one. The golf course has one. There's like five or six.
I was checking out my
area.
Home. My hometown has one, about 3-4 miles from me.
Well, then everybody can have one if your hometown can have one.
So yeah, I don't have to buy one. I'll just check the neighbors out. So okay, well, we'll provide the links in the show notes for that. So thank you very much.
No problem.
Technology pick of the week this week is a little charger that I have for my new Samsung Galaxy S7 phone, and this is a wireless charger. And Samsung themselves makes one, but it's a little bit more expensive, so I kind of went the cheap route and went and got this. It's called Anker, A-N-K-E-R. I'll provide a link in the show notes. It's about $17. So I ended up, I bought one for here at work, and then I've got one at home, so I never plug my phone in anymore to charge. So you just simply lay it on, it's wireless charging, and my phone is not, honestly, I've had this phone for a couple months now, and it's not gotten below 50%. A couple times, because I'm doing some video work, it'll go, but it's like, I got to put that on a charger. It's below 50%, and I use it quite a bit. So we just had a little argument here about how to pronounce it. There's a wireless charging standard out there called QI, and we're like, how do you pronounce that?
And we went with the Google.
And we went with the Google.
And they gave us two answers.
So we're back to where we started. I thought it was pronounced Qi, or I've heard it pronounced that way. But the spelling's QI. So I went to Google, and we can click a link. So if I've got my sound wired up here so we can record this in our podcast, here's the United States pronunciation.
Key. Key.
And just for good measure, they also give us the UK pronunciation.
Chi.
See, I always go Britain every time.
Chi.
So it's like, do you say GIF or GIF, all right?
Graphic interchange format. I'm going to go with the G.
The Google, 50-50 chance, can be right either way, just like GIF or GIF. Out there as well. But this little wireless charger, very cheap, very economical.
Very cool looking, by the way.
Very nice not to have to dangle a cable, and especially with it's a micro USB charger, so those can only go in one way, unlike the Apple Lightning chargers that you can put in either way. So you have to look at this little tiny thing. Don't have to do that anymore. Just throw it on this little, it looks like a hockey puck to me. Throw it on top of there, let it charge, and you're good to go. So that's kind of my cheap pick for the day. Then the second one is on my wish list, which it's too expensive, so I'm probably not going to get it. But the other piece of this Galaxy S7, last month, Cindy and I was talking about the Gear VR and the virtual reality goggles.
Those are cool.
So Samsung also has their Gear 360. I'm just punching it in. I'll provide a link in the show notes. But this is a 360-degree camera. And it's like $400. But there's all kinds of virtual reality content being created. You know, I shared those goggles with you a couple weeks ago.
And disoriented me.
Disoriented. But giving a 3D look around with that accelerometer up, down, you know, looking left, right, and things, you can make your own little virtual worlds within that. So, again, some educational applications. I just kind of think of, like, you know, virtual field trips and things. Throw it in a national park. And that's another announcement. This week, the International Society for Technology and Education Conference is going on out in Denver, Colorado. So all these education companies are making a lot of announcements. And Google just announced that they're really putting a lot more resources into the virtual reality out on YouTube. And I don't know if you've noticed. Have you noticed the 360 videos out there available now?
It's amazing how much easier those are to produce, because I went out to Corporatino on their campus, and Mac Programmers Workshop was this piece of software, and we had to take photos and stitch them together. Oh, it was 4 hours to make what my iPhone can now make in 15 seconds. Mm-hmm. So that's a neat little camera. And for what it does, and the math it's doing and the physics it's figuring out.
Yeah, the engineer,
it's a steal.
On the engineering side of that, as you know, the mathematics and things behind that, it's just mind-boggling what it can do. And you know, literally now at the push of a button to be able to do that. And with the iPhone or the Galaxy S7, the Android phones, there are actually apps that you can still do. You know, take the picture panorama and it does stitch mm-hmm. together. So you don't have to have the $400 camera. You can still do that. Except you're taking, you know, like 100 pictures, you know, to
what's
to
the price on
together.
That?
$389 for this particular one. It just became available in the States.
So it's going to come down over time a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. But, you know, that's kind of this little ecosystem once you kind of get sucked into, you know, learning about I'm kind of tooling up, I guess, you know, to this world of virtual reality and augmented reality as well out there. So that's just on my wish list, I guess, out there. But price is going to have to come down a little bit. So what's your pick, Brian?
Well, you come a little bit more from the Windows Intel universe, and I come a little bit more from the iPhone universe, Apple universe. And yet, my pick this week is the Samsung Galaxy Tab A8.
An Android tablet.
An Android tablet. It's been out about a year, you tell me. And I think they're going to be replaced soon. If you know, you were telling me that's the recycling of the lines is about this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
If you search around really hard, I think the list price usually is $169. I got mine last week by picking the right color for $139.
There's a special right now, smoky blue, $138.
Okay, so I couldn't get the smoky blue last week, but it's a great little tablet. It replaces my iPad, which is several generations old. It takes micro SD memory. Mm-hmm. It's just a great little tablet for the price, and I was even talking to one of our head technology guy at the university. I said, man, if I could find an excuse to use this in a class at $135 a student, which is still a lot of money, but it's not $1,200 for a laptop or thing. And it comes with Microsoft Office bunch of stuff. And
you just did get this, right, recently, like in the last week?
Last week.
Okay. So the jury's kind of still out because you're a photographer. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that I'm curious, and I don't know what the screen resolution on that is.
I think it's 1280. It's not.
So it's.
It's not amazingly high, but.
And certainly a lot lower than the latest iPad, but it's a quarter of the cost.
Yeah, but for $135, it's a steal.
Yeah, and all the different things, the apps. It'll be curious as you put a few more miles on it to see, because you're used to the iPhone, iPad ecosystem, how the quality of the app stack. We were just playing a little bit with Snapseed. I know is one of your.
Yeah, and it did just fine. I don't think you're going to, you know, even if you can get it, Photoshop or something, it just doesn't have the horsepower, but that's not what this is built for. If I want to work on Photoshop, I may need a 20-inch monitor or something, and that's just not what this is about, but. You know,
now, this one's saying the resolution is 1024 by 768.
That sounds right.
If it's the same model that you have here. So, you know, that's quite a bit lower. And that's, you know, versus the Samsung Galaxy S7. Like I said, this is the flagship phone. I finally said that I've got a phone as good or better than my students. And the price, you know, as you said, you know, less than $150 for an 8-inch tablet. We just very quickly, I'll mention, we hooked it up to our Miracast receiver out there to project the screen wirelessly to a projector in the front of the room. It did okay. It was dropping some frames. And
I think the real problem is just keep one application running at a time.
Yeah, we were multitasking.
Unlike the iPad, it'll actually let you show and display two different, you know, apps or windows.
Screen.
So don't tax it that way. But again, I'm not saying this is the end all be all, but for $134 shipped to me.
Yeah.
That's a good deal.
Okay, so those are our tech picks of the week. That wraps it up for episode 190 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/itc. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment on the Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, I'm Tom Grissom.
I'm Brian Poulter.
Keep on learning.